Blog Talk Radio.
Well, God bless you and welcome. Welcome to Reverend Carl White and another episode of Can We Be Real? We're excited tonight and we're going to get right into the conversation. The conversation tonight has to do with theological questions. And the theological question is, can we be cute and sexy and still be a Christian? How shall we live? How shall we get to the point where we're able to relate to our youth that are in the world and yet and still they have a need to have a relationship with a God that's larger than them, that's bigger than them, and that's absolutely marvelous, that looks beyond and loves them anyway. How shall we live? Maybe we can figure out some combination of that. I think there's something that could help us to get some skills to remain true to our identity and still have a sense of modesty, still have a sense of being cool, and still have a sense that includes us to be able to work in the world and live in the world, but not be able to, just get caught up in the traps that come from being sexy and looking out in the world and living according to the flesh. We've got some of our local resident professionals on the line this evening. This is Reverend Carl, and if you want to join our conversation, just dial in 347-855-8793. 347-855-8793. And even as we were preparing for this, we got a number of situations here that dealing with the church, oftentimes we hear contradictions about being sexy and sex itself. Sometimes it's called dirty, it's called nasty, and whatever you do, don't do it. And save it for the one you love. And how is it that we're going to remain abstinent and not to engage? And what does it really mean? Is it something that we're just supposed to don't touch, don't look, don't ask, don't explore, because sex is dirty and it's going to make you dirty soon as if you get involved with it too? So is this message effective in our world today? We've got our friend on the line all the way from California. Are you there?
I'm here.
Good evening to you. How you doing this evening there, Kev?
Very well. Good evening.
Man, we got more men on the phone on this call. Normally, we have a lot of females, but I tell you, it's amazing. Just knowing how the world kind of talks about sex and sexuality and then being in a relationship with someone, what would you tell some of the young folks, say if you had a daughter and you wanted her to grow up, you know, despite whatever religion you may be or religion you may not be, what would you tell your daughter about being sexy and cute and having a sense of God in mind? What would you tell your daughter, Kev?
I would tell her to always think before she acts. Always think before you act.
Well, how does that relate to being cool, though? You know, and you tell them to think, because you think back to some of the times when you and I were running around there in California and doing a bunch of crazy things.
Yes, I remember.
Huh? You hardly remember. Well, let's just get some alarming statistics now. One of the things that we're dealing with is every year more than 750,000 unintended teenage pregnancies, and approximately 40% of those end in abortion. 19 million sexually transmitted infections, and more than 1 billion acts of unprotected sex. And so she's coming and she's, you know, getting ready to move out into the world, and oftentimes teens, they don't talk. And so, you know, giving them some idea of how could you get her to talk to you?
I wouldn't try to sugar it up. I would just be honest and tell her there are consequences to every action.
Yes.
There's always consequences to every action. And to think before you act. Back to my favorite theme, thinking before action.
And if she happened to, you know, like, you know, kids do, they slip up, make a mistake, then what?
Then I would tell her not to panic, but to recognize the situation, pay attention, and that every life needs attention. But it does require attention.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we as a community need to stop running from reality and stop hiding behind the fact, period.
Now, one of the things that is real important, you brought that up too, is that running from reality is almost it seems like it's easier to kind of like not talk about it or don't say anything about it.
Well, when you don't talk about it, the situation doesn't go away. That's just shedding more ignorance on the situation. We should all talk about it. It's
mm-hmm.
reality. We didn't get here by coincidence or people slapping their hands together.
Right.
We got here through intercourse.
Yes.
People need to be educated on that situation. First and foremost, education. Once
you know,
you
it
educate,
makes... Go ahead.
Once you educate, you remove the stigma and the nasty and the dirty, just some education, shedding some light on the reality. Speak the truth. Go ahead, Carl.
You're preaching good, man. You're preaching good. You know, I've actually had pastors, because we will do summits on sexuality and literally have classes to do the education. We also include abstinence in our education. But for those who are incapable of engaging in no sex at all, then we give out condoms. So in
that
sense of that, some of the pastors have said, well, Carl, you're going to make them want to have sex. What do you have to say about
that? You're not going to make them want to have sex. Sex is a natural thought. It's a natural occurrence. We don't have these organs willy-nilly. They didn't just happenstance on our bodies. So it's quite natural. But you need to educate them on the consequences of sex.
Yes.
The consequences.
Because you will see something that will happen sequentially.
Yes. That's why my attitude is speak to the truth. And speak
yes.
the truth. The reality, the facts are, pregnancies can happen.
Yes.
They didn't happen because you shook hands. They happened because of the intercourse.
Now, how do you talk to someone, you know, and you say, well, I'm going to educate you, but they don't want to talk?
Well, they don't want to talk primarily for a couple of reasons, because as adults, we approach the young ones as if they don't know anything about sex. They know what they feel every day inside. They know what they feel when a pretty girl walks by them. They know what they feel.
Yes.
We have to get real with them. We
mm-hmm.
have to express it as adults. Somebody has to be an adult in the conversation and just say, you know, this is what can happen if you're not paying attention to what I'm telling you. And then ask them how they feel about it. And they'll tell you, well, yeah, I've had sex several times. And ask them, when were you going to tell me about it? Well, never.
That's
seriously,
a typical
never.
Conversation, too. Usually from someone a little older than 14 or 15 or someone that has a lot of control in the household. One of the keys to what you have said, though, is education and telling the truth and being mature enough to actually bring the conversation up.
Absolutely. don't hide, and don't hide the truth. And the thing is, kids know a lot more than they let on to.
Yes.
They just do. And what they're trying to do is not embarrass you as the adult. But they already know a lot of what you're going to bring up in the dialogue. Just ask
so if we're not talking to them as an adult, where are they learning it?
From their friends, who also don't know nothing. That's why you have to talk to them.
So they're learning from their peers about a conversation of sexuality that we should be having with our children.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I think we've got another caller from Minneapolis on the phone. Let's bring Minneapolis into the
call.
Do you have to leave, Kev?
I do, as a matter of fact.
Okay, well, we appreciate you and your insight tonight. Thank you very much. Remember, you can come back every Thursday night. We're right here at the same time, same station. Just call in 347-855-8793. Thanks a lot, Kev.
Thank you very much.
Brother Mahdi.
Yes, sir, Brother Carl.
How you doing this evening?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good, brother. How about yourself?
I'm telling you that this is the night for men tonight on the line. We're dealing with these issues and really trying to make up for some lost time when all the guys get on TV and say, "Hi, Mom." Well, here's all the guys on the phone tonight, and we're dealing with real issues like sex and sexuality and how we relate to our daughters and how we relate to our sons. And you being a parent, how would you broach this conversation?
Well, I think, first of all, I like what Kevin said about giving education, because I'm a firm believer in that. And as my ex-wife being a nurse, you know, that's something that we always have had for the kids is a concern about sexually transmitted diseases and diseases in general and how we treat our health. So I think the education was a beautiful thing, and I even put that in one of my little notes there. But also, I think a lot of times with religion, as far as us being religious people, you know, we'll shy away from it to say, "Oh, that doesn't happen to us," or "We don't need to talk about that," and, you know, "We don't want to get into that." But in reality, in today's time, and in the situations that we live in, it's a reality. It's a reality,
yes.
and it's a human nature thing that's what we're going to do usually when we get in preteen to adulthood. You start coming out with these things and finding your sexuality, however it may be or whatever. So we need to keep it real, as the young people say, and deal with it and talk about it. And if you can't talk about it with your parents, and I think you should have a dialogue with your kids. If you don't, find somebody that does. Find somebody that does, whether it be a professional or a clergy or whoever you go, minister or whoever you go to. Find somebody that can get to your kids and talk with them, because if they don't find out from you, they're going to find out from somebody else.
And they might find out from their peers during the occasion of it. Or it might
Absolutely.
Be a little late.
Absolutely.
Another startling statistic here in the Atlanta area, they had a study to come out in 2008, and this study stated that for young African-American females between the age of 13 and 19, one out of two in the Atlanta metropolitan area had a sexually transmitted disease. One out of
two. You know, I think here in Minneapolis as well, I think it's just about that bad.
Yeah.
for teen or the ages that you mentioned right there for teen sexually transmitted diseases. It's pretty high. So they're being active. We know this. So now we understand the problem. What's the solution?
Well, what would you say is a solution is to it, besides, I know we talked about education, we talked about dealing with the truth and the reality of it, but, you know, some people, they find it hard to even talk to adults about sex. What about this, dealing with the stigma of sexuality?
You're absolutely right. I think we do have a problem with that, which we need to explore more and have more open dialogue, such as what yourself is doing tonight and through other means of communication, because we do have a pretty high epidemic proportion with sexually transmitted diseases, as well as AIDS and other things like that. So we need to really look into that, Carl. I don't know. I had a pretty good relationship with my parents, and we talked about everything. I don't know if everybody has that type of relationship. I'm sure they don't. So for me, that was not a tough thing for me. So where you get it from, like I said once again, they're trusting somebody, and you have to tap that gamut of where they're getting their information from. I don't know. Probably from internet and all kind of different sources, I'm sure. But
without a doubt. I mean, when we were kids, there were just a number of, you know, not as much different ways of seeing pictures. I mean, you might have snuck and saw a Hustler magazine or a Playboy,
right.
But now
right,
the internet
right.
is just filled.
Yes.
So it's
almost to out of control proportion.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Amen.
Yeah,
now, here's one of my emails that came in. It says, Pastor Carl, I'm looking forward to this. I believe this is a conversation should be open for discussion and taught the church under lifestyles. And it pertains to life and spiritual growth and development and such. And they go on to say that sexy, as defined by the dictionary, is sexually suggestive, stimulating, erotic. And then ends with the scripture, if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom with one eye than to have two eyes and thrown into hell. Cute, sexy, and Christian are causing major casualties in the church. What would you say about that?
Wow. I would say...
How are you going to do, pluck your kids' eyes out?
You know, I don't think that means so much literal sense than it means, you know, maybe divert their eyes somewhere else, or their mindset somewhere else, or whatever. But I would think that we would probably need to get to some type of solution prior to any of this happening, like you said, you know, earlier, that, you know, once it happens, it that's it. But what do we do to stop it from happening?
I think one of the things is having open, honest communication, and not to deal with it. Another one of my callers, he sends me a text saying, the problem is we teach children that it's nasty and dirty. A little boy who's touching himself, boy, stop playing with yourself. And we live in denial, and we suppress our own self.
Right, and I think that's what stirs a lot of people to do a lot of these crazy acts, because they are suppressing a lot of the things that are in them that is a natural thing, and take it as nasty, quote unquote, and then they start acting out in weird ways. We need to find a way to not look at it as it being nasty, because it's a natural thing. But in its context, keep it in its context. You feel what I mean? Like, we were taught maybe, you know, don't do it until you get married or whatever, you get the
right
person to be with or whatever. You know, you're just not out here just being frivolous.
Yes. And we can teach
like
that, and that's fine for those who can wait, and that's wonderful. But as we can see, 750,000 teenagers, they cannot, and that's a large percentage of people.
Obviously, Carl, they're not using any protection.
There you go.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, if you're going to do it, use protection. You know, I'm against that, but if you're going to do it, use protection, because any of us can make a mistake at any time. So use
right.
protection. That's not a guarantee. The only guarantee is abstinence, period. But if you're going to, use some protection, some form of protection.
Say, if you can't keep your pants up and your dress down, then at least
yes.
wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
We've got another caller from the 336 area code. Are you there, caller?
Yes, Pastor Carl. This is Marian. How
are
you?
Hey, Marian, how you doing?
I am blessed this evening. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. Have you been listening to our conversation we're dealing with
tonight? I have, and I'm really excited to hear the men and the fathers really engaged in this conversation. I think it's really important. I know as a woman, I remember growing up, and it was not a conversation. I mean, we talked about a lot of things in our household, but, you know, premarital sex or sex was not one of them. It was my mother literally just said, if you do, I will kill you.
Oh, my God.
I kid you not. You know, if you get pregnant, you come home pregnant, I will kill you. And we believed her. And then my dad, of course, it was just not a conversation that he was, you know, comfortable with having even later on in life when we became adults and married. So I think the key is that parents have to start early with their children, building a relationship as early as elementary school. Quite frankly, I have a granddaughter now, and I talk to her, you know, about, safety, allowing people to touch her, appropriate conduct or dress or, you know, how she refers to her body parts, that type of thing. And I think that's all very important. I think the reason we have the number of, you know, sexually transmitted diseases or teen pregnancies, a lot of young people struggle with their self-worth and their value. And so the first person that comes along and pays attention to them and wants to spend time with them, they give into that just for the need to feel needed or to be loved or in a relationship. That's why I think it's healthy to have the conversation. But then I also recognize that the people who are the youth, you know, that we may be talking about today are going to become adults at some point. And if they do not learn how to conduct themselves in relationships, they grow, into adults who are still making the same choices. And I actually was sent the scripture, you know, indicating, you know, if the eye causes thee to sin, because as a single woman in the church, you know, I see both men and women who are dressing inappropriately and, you know, and their main purpose or goal is to attract a spouse, you know.
Right.
And unfortunately, that can cause people to fall if you're living a Christian lifestyle and you're trying to practice abstinence or righteous or holy living and you have someone who is, you know, flaunting themselves in front of you and men being visual, as I've heard many times before, you know, that is going to cause them to stumble. But I know, you know, women who will also stumble from looking at a very fine or attractive brother. So I think we just have to be cognizant when we dress. When we leave our home, what message are we sending?
I think it's very important to know that God created us as sexual beings. One of the things that we know that we're taught our fleshly desires, they lead us from God in a sense, you know, because it's of the flesh, it's of the world. I'm in the world, but I'm not of the world. But if we look at the story, our hero, Jesus, became flesh.
Right.
And dwelt
among
us.
Yeah, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think there is a place, you know, for arousing, you know, that type of passion. But that, you know, but from my, you know, my view is that's in the marital bed. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
between a husband and a wife. I think if you're certainly a teenager or youth or in the preteens or you're an unmarried person, then I think your mind or focus should be on something else besides sexy. you know.
That's the goal, of course. I mean, without a doubt, on the onset. But then, if we have teenagers who, I mean, have you bought little girls' clothes lately? I have a daughter that's 21, and then I have two others that are 13 and 11. And say about 4 or 5 years ago, the stores, the clothes made a switch. They have midriff clothes for little girls, like the JonBenet Ramsey, the makeup, the tight outfits, they used to call them hot pants. Now they call them Daisy Dukes,
right.
and now they call them coochie cutters.
Right. And see, now here's the thing. Right. Now here's the thing. They do have that because, like I said, I have a granddaughter, you know, and I shop for my granddaughter, and you know, I take her shopping, and you know, and she, her mother, you know, was a fashion major, has a degree in fashion design, you know, and so she's very, you know, for a child, you know, she is very aware of fashion and clothing and that type of thing, you know. But then I also tell her, you know, that's not appropriate dress, and just because they make it and they sell it doesn't mean that we're going to buy it and that you're going to wear it. And then I'll use the first family for an example. I mean, they're raising two daughters, okay?
Yes.
And when you see their daughters and they're in the public or in the media or in the news and what have you, they're dressed very appropriately, but they're very fashionable, and the clothes that they're wearing are trendy, you know, but they're appropriate. Their bodies are covered. And that's what I think we have to teach our girls is modesty.
Another one of my brothers, and he's of the Muslim faith, and his wife wears the burqa, the whole thing. And so we were talking one day, and I was like, well, man, you know, what's going on with that? How does that, you know, how do you guys manage? I mean, you live in the United States and so forth like that, and not anything condemning or putting it down, but just as a matter of inquiry. And he says to me, he says, well, man, you don't want no other person looking at your wife and lusting after her, do you? And I'm like, wait a minute. It's kind of frivolous to me to worry about what another man is thinking. And in trying to control someone's thoughts by, you know, clothes and all of these things, I'm not saying that it's not appropriate to dress modestly. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that if we think that we can control someone's behavior because of the style of dress, then you know, we definitely wouldn't have had the problem in the Catholic Church. That's for sure.
I would agree.
Yeah, go ahead, Marty.
Yeah, I was going to say, though, that, you know, I hear what you're saying, but there's a limit. I mean, I remember when I was in the military and we were on some maneuvers, and we were in this area that was really dark. There was a road into the base, but this young lady was walking with some Daisy Dukes on, dressed very suggestively, and to me, first of all, you're asking for trouble when you're walking out there like that by yourself as a woman anyway. You should have been with some other people. Now, on the other hand, then you're dressing like that also, because all it takes for a person that is a rapist or a crazy person like that, they don't think like me and you. All they see is flesh, and they're after it.
We're not condoning that because someone dressed suggestively that is a reason or a validation for abuse. Because abuse.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that.
Whole other area, and that's definitely not what we're condoning or saying anything about that. But go ahead with your point.
My point is sometimes when we do these things, even like in the workplace and everything. People will dress, or women will dress like that, and some guys, but women mostly, I'm talking about, that will say, for instance, when I work construction, and they might be, you know, wearing their shirts lower, and when they bend over, because they got to do a lot of bending over, you know, you tend to see things or whatever, and I just think that you're asking for trouble. You know what you're doing. So I think that it goes back to what the young lady was saying, and I have to agree with her, is about modesty. We have to understand where modesty is and where that cutoff is. Yeah, it's a free world. You can do what you want to do. We can run outside naked, too, but you can go to jail for it. So
yeah, well,
the prophet
Ezekiel, I believe he preached almost 2 years butt naked to make sure that the world was getting his message. And so, yeah, there's historical significance to that, too. But the question remains, though, how do we make the connection to our youth? And how do we, in light of them wanting to be cool and accepted, because you remember them bell-bottom shoes and them platform shoes used to wear.
Yeah, I knew.
Come on. And that big afro where your hair won't grow anymore, Marion.
Yes. Yeah.
Come on.
But you know, here's the thing, though, but Pastor Carl, I look back, and I'll be honest with you, I look back at some of my pictures down and the style of clothing that I wore, you know, as I'd probably say, you know, 15, 16, you know. But I looked and I said, oh, my goodness, I can't believe my mother let me go out the house dressed like this, you know. And so that's why I think it's important to teach, you know, our children, our young ladies, you know. And then, you know, as far as our sons, we have to teach them to be respectful and mindful, you know, of how they treat ladies. You know, and just because these, but I'll tell you a story. We were in church, and they had an altar call, and several young people went up for prayer. My son had to be 13 or 14 at the time, and we were on our way home, and he said to me, Mom, did you see that one girl? And I said, what girl? You know, and he went on to describe what she had on, and she had on a thong, he said.
Well, you know, quite a few people go to church and start cruising the members.
You know, she went up for prayer and was kneeling at the altar, but because of her attire, you know, that's what he was looking at, you know, and she was, you know, interceding on her behalf. So what I'm saying is, you know, a person's dress, their appearance, you know, it will cause you to stumble.
Bless the Lord on that. Let's take another caller from Seattle. Are you there, caller from Seattle, 206?
Yes, I'm here.
And did you want to add to the conversation?
Yes, I want to add to the conversation. But you know what? When you go into a department store and you see those provocative styles, you complain to the buyers. And that's what happened up here in Seattle. The parents did not approve of it. And so they complain because you go to Nordstrom's and certain stores, you won't find it. So you have to set an example for your children and tell them that it's not allowed. Because otherwise, even when I have worked, I had a young lady one time when I was catering, and she came out and she says, I'm going to get us some good tips tonight. And she had opened up her blouse and was showing her bosom. And I said, no. You cover yourself up. You button your blouse. That's not how you're going to get tips. You're going to get tips by doing your job and being courteous and helping the people. So we have to teach our children, because just the same way we're teaching them to be modest, respectful of their body, you have, on the other hand, the people that are saying, and in the videos, they're showing the girls with the stripper pole, and they're showing them, you know, everybody's having breast implants. So you have to tell them to respect their body, because if you don't respect your body, the next person is not going to either.
Amen. I just got an email from Pastor Karen Lyons. She says, girls can be sexy and Christian. They can be beautiful girls maturing into beautiful, sexy women of God. It is a head and heart matter, for the issues that flow in the head need to be run through the heart to make sure godly maturity is happening. So many women live as surrogates through the lives and standards of someone else, desiring to be affirmed by the standards of another person and not the genuine, loving, sexy woman God created and birthed them to be. the world instead of the word, and becoming a standard for living and dressing. If people don't acknowledge them and see their true beauty, they rely on what's on TV, radio, magazines, and friends to tell them that they look like or say they value if they want to hear and fear others make them think they are or they look sexy. Being a sexy Christian comes from within, and knowing that God created each one of us to understand and value our sexuality. Reverend Derek, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah. What would you want to add to our conversation tonight? And happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I just think, you know, we as believers, as Christians, I think when we know better, we're supposed to do better. And God is holding us to a standard. Not only should we know better, but we're supposed to teach those around us to do better because we represent Him and we're supposed to be princesses and princes, you know, and that's what we're supposed to look like. So we set an example everybody else should follow. You don't have to show the cleavage or your pants hanging down in order to look like perfect gentlemen or to look sexy. I agree with the pastor said. You can be saved. You can look sexy and attractive in a you know appropriate way. You know, and I think us as believers and leaders, we need to show our children, our young people, that, you know, it's nothing wrong with wearing a shirt and a tie. It's nothing wrong with looking businesslike. It's nothing because we represent the King. And
yes.
If that's what we're supposed to be, we're supposed to represent Him right. I mean, it's just like, you know, when we were young, our parents, those that, you know, had respect, dressed us in a certain way because we represent the whole household.
Yes.
And that's what we are. We're representing the household of faith. So we need to set an example to the world that we're classy people. We're not strange. We're peculiar, and we're supposed to set an example for the world.
It's an easy thing to say, but you know, even as we do this, how can we get youth and young folks? When the world is just so fast, they got it on the cell phone, they texting, they even got a thing now called sexting, where they're sending pictures, nude pictures of themselves one to another. There was another story on ABC done it, calling it the new goodnight kiss. The new goodnight kiss is actually oral sex. Where some folks are engaging, these are teens and preteens and middle schoolers. So how do we get a message of modesty to a youth that, hey, as we said back in the 70s, they gone buck wild.
Right, right.
You know what, the parents are scared to talk to their children.
Right.
I mean, how many parents? I mean, they do not. They think, I mean, that you need to start that in fifth grade of talking to them about their body, talking to them about sex.
Right, and be honest. Yeah.
And the parents, they say, oh, that's nasty, that's dirty. Oh, girls, but they are engaging, and people need to stop being narrow-minded and speak because now there's germs that are killing them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's germs that you cannot get rid of.
Yeah. Well, I agree.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No,
I think,
go ahead.
Like she said, if we stop trying to sugarcoat everything and just be honest and you know, pour it out there as plain as it is. I mean, even if you have to get graphic to show them pictures, what will happen to you if you do engage in this type of behavior, you know. You have to get graphic sometimes and scare them, you know. Remember there was a program years ago called Scare Straight?
Yes.
And sometimes we have to actually, you know, show them reality. You know, they're just looking at, just like the enemy, he will show you all the glamour and glitz, but he doesn't show you the repercussions. So, but that's what we need to do as parents, show them what will happen if they choose this type of lifestyle, if they live this type of lifestyle. And I think the young man said earlier about when you're dressing a certain way, you're asking for trouble. And you are. You know exactly what you're doing, but then as parents, we need to show them that this could happen if you dress a certain way. Everybody that's walking on the street is not saved. Everybody doesn't have a conscience. Everybody doesn't have common sense. If it was that common, everybody would have it. So you have to tell them, you know, listen, you keep dressing like this, this could happen to you. This may happen. Show them, take them to the hospital. There's a young girl that got raped because she was dressed this way. And sometimes we have to take that approach.
Yes. Yes, and just a number of terrible diseases now, hepatitis A,
right.
B, and C. I think they've even moved past C, and they have no controls for any of them beyond B, and flesh-eating diseases, and
right.
Oh, my God, genital warts, and much less AIDS and HIVs and cancers and all kinds of infections and bacteria that are out there literally waiting. And I think one of the things, too, is I used to work on the Amtrak, and we would travel. And so some of the fellows would, you know, hit different cities. You'd be in Chicago overnight or whatever. And one brother went out, and he met a lady and so forth, and they carried on. And he woke up in the morning, and in red letters on the mirror, it was said, welcome to the world of AIDS.
Mm.
And some people who are infected, they will say, well, I'm going to infect everybody
right.
who
right.
I can. And
mm-hmm.
and I think those are some of the graphic stories that need to be told and need to be shared with our young folks so that you know literally you're playing Russian roulette with your genitalia.
Right, with your life. Exactly.
Yes.
Right, these things that they're going to be stuck with for life until it takes them out of here permanently. You know, and I think that we do have to take the graphic approach, you know, to tell these young people that they think it's all fun and games. But, you know, like the sister was saying, there's things that you can't get rid of, any, you know, these days. When we were young, you go to the clinic or your doctor and they give you a needle or a shot, whatever. But these things that's going around, it's incurable.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Now, what about the trend and tendency now towards many of the churches? They will not pass out condoms. They will not have classes on domestic violence or any of the other sexually related troubles. How can we educate our Christian brothers and sisters about just to have some honest conversations? What would you suggest?
I think we should have more summits. I know a lot of churches don't agree with it, you know, because they just think you're pushing the young people into having sex. But let's face it, you know, you can speak abstinence all you want to, but they're going to do what they want to do anyway, peer pressure and other things in life. So there are some churches that, you know, have teen summits, and they just be honest. Listen, if you are going to do it, make sure you be safe. If you know, make sure you have checkups, make sure, you know, and I think it comes from the church. We're living in denial, or we just
yes.
think that it's a touchy subject, but, you know, we don't say anything until the teen young girl comes, you know, to us and say that they're pregnant, and then we want to sit them down when we should have tried to prevent that in the first place. Or the young man comes in and he says he has AIDS or HIV, and then we want to, you know, ostracize him or put him out when we should have been the one to try to prevent that by teaching, you know, if you are going to do something, protect yourself or try to stay away from that, you know, or get into more activities where they won't have so much time to do you know, the things that's entertaining to them. I think if churches had more activities for the young people that they are interested in, you know, God never changes, but conditions change. So
yeah.
when we were young, we might have had activities that was, you know, beneficial to us and interesting to us, but, you know, we have to find out what's going on out there and, you know, get their interest, see what they want to do, something that's beneficial and educational at the same time.
Yes, indeed. One. I just got another email. Romans 12:2 says, "Be not fashioned according to the world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, and you can prove what is good and acceptable and perfect will of God." And the question, though, is that's an excellent scripture, but how can we transform a mindset?
Right. Yeah.
And that's the challenge for us to I think, and it, like we've been talking about it all this evening, is looking at ministry in this present age and being honest and truthful about it and recognizing their worth. I just got another text. It says, let's take back the control of our own lives and our own bodies and value who God created each one of us to be.
All right.
Yes, indeed. Well, we appreciate you calling in this evening and being with us. And just let me know whenever. You can always join us online.
Be blessed.
All right. Thank you now. Sister Marion, are you still there? Did you want to get back in on the conversation?
Well, Pastor Carl, what I was going to say was I think that the having an open dialogue in the church and being able to go into the churches and talk is very important to the youth ministries, the college-age ministries, and even the unmarried ministries. But the key is being able to open up the conversation where people are comfortable talking about it. And I think once we do that, I think we can begin to see some changes as far as the lifestyle and application. The church that I attend, we actually have a ministry. It's challenged by HIV is the ministry. And we have a number of calls where churches throughout the Carolinas as well as Virginia are calling and asking us to come in and to speak and to do workshops. And in addition to just outreach, attending college conferences or doing workshops in barbershops, hair salons, that type of thing. And people are wanting information. They're needing to know. We find that it's the young people that are eager to learn. It's the parents and the adults who don't want to know for some reason.
That is amazing to me, the contradictions about being sex and sexy and sex itself. And like the brother said earlier, is that it's the only way that we all got here. But for some reason, we've gotten this message that it is nasty and dirty and it's something to be snuck and hidden. And one of the things I learned when I was traveling in Europe, it was because we were in France, and you went to La Plage, which is the swimming pool, and to go swimming there. And all of the ladies were topless. It's just normal. And so my dad and I were there, and, of course, when we first got there, we were, like, oogling and googling. But then after you were there for a while and you got into the spirit of what was happening in that environment, it was no different than a man being topless. It's just a natural thing. When we were in Portugal, when you're at a restaurant and a man and a woman go to use the restroom, they both walk into the same door. And they have a common parlor area. So you would be there doing your makeup, and he would be there washing his hands. But when you had to go into the stall, they had different doors for that, which it showed a lot more openness about sex, sexuality, and our body temples. Because, we were told that our bodies are the temple of God. And yet and still, that just makes it almost a picture of Mother Mary. It's high and lifted up and it shall not be touched. But in one sense, it's the temple of God in that we respect it, we honor it, we cherish it, we not necessarily worship it, but we definitely cleanse it and we take good care of ourselves, we dress ourselves up, we like to look good, we like to go on the cruise and dress up and all that kind of stuff. But in the churches, it seems like because the body has just been just beat down, that it almost reverberates back to some wanting this expression that's been suppressed. And over in Europe, I didn't see that at all. And in fact, the sexual deviancy is not as high. The teenage pregnancies is not as high. And the rate of STIs and STDs is not as high as in America either.
Yeah,
so
that's what my question was going to be to you, is what were the statistics there? But that's very interesting observation, and thank you for sharing. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yes, and because I believe, you know, because even what Jesus said, the truth is the light, and the truth will show you the way. And the one thing about my dad, that was one thing about Dad. Dad was, he wasn't, you know, the most perfect person in the whole world. He did some things, and he had his own cross to bear. But Dad was honest and truthful, especially when it came to dealing with life and sex and sexuality. And sometimes he was a little too permissible for me, but, you know, it was his way of doing things that really kind of upset or just changed it a little bit. And I think it's so important that we are honest and we deal truthfully with this, because I think one of the things that causes us to fall is that this notion that we can be perfect and somehow we can, you know, if I just get enough marks in the good column, then I'll graduate, and then the sweet ship lollipop will come and pick me up and take me to the land of no more, you know, no more pain, no more suffering, no more crying, no more tears, no more. And unfortunately, it's not that scripture that I believe that it says it's not of yourselves that you are saved, but by grace through faith, and lest anyone boast. And we've taken it so that if I just live a chaste life and I pay my tithes and I pray right and I pay right, definitely, and I stay right, then I'm going to be saved and safe. But somehow I never felt safe because I was always looking at them little girls. And so I think that we kind of have to have a shift back to the paradigm of the model that Jesus set. And Jesus said, "Why do you call me good? There's none good except the Father." And he was talking to the young man who had called him good. And so I think we kind of have to move back to letting God be God and us being what we are, created in the image of God.
Right. And Pastor Carl, if I could, I just would like to interject one other thing that I was sitting here thinking about. If we even remove the thinking, focusing so much on the physical as far as, you know, the pregnancy, the sexually transmitted diseases you know, are occurring as a result of this, we have to think about the emotional weight that it is having on our children and young people when they become involved in relationships and they are, you know, becoming sexually active and they become tied to that person. There are soul ties, and, you know, we send our sons, our daughters away to college and they end up with soul ties. Some of them end up committing suicide, you know, unable to complete school, and, you know, because of a pregnancy or a relationship that had them so depressed and so bound because they weren't emotionally prepared or mature enough to enter into a physical relationship. So it is important that we talk about it, but just outside of saying, do you realize that if you are sleeping and intimate and entering into these relationships, you can catch a disease? But more
yes.
So, do you recognize what this is doing to your soul and the effect it's going to have on you for the rest of your life? You know, the soul ties, you know, and those soul ties, you know, if they're entering into a series of these relationships, you know, it can be very oppressive, and they can end up.
Without a doubt. I mean, emotionally and psychologically,
mm-hmm.
we're linked far greater. And anybody who has been in any type of relationships, they know that, you know, you can have the best friendship in the world until you have sex.
Right.
And then after you have sex, there's nothing else to talk about. and even Absalom, after he had desired his half-sister Tamara for so long, and when he had her, then he cast her aside. And so that was one of the biggest sins, even in David's household, that he had cast his, the one he had desired so much. And so you see it nowadays, too, where not only the men are desirous of the women, but the women are desirous of the men. And we've got this polarity going on, like you said, is that it's facilitating access to something that we have no idea of the magnitude of it. And then we can fall into frustration and fear and depression and eventually be suicidal, not because we want to kill ourselves, but because we want to kill the pain.
Exactly.
It also leads to drug addiction. Mm-hmm. And even in the days when we were back in the day, we would call get a fix, and the junkies would get a fix so they could fix the pain. And nowadays it's been modernized. The young folks, they get a blunt. They want to cut the pain. They want to blunt it off. And the key to it is so many times is that if you have no relationship with someone who's wiser, if you have no relationship with someone who's been through something, who can sit you down and say, look here, sweetie, you don't have the right to do what is wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And let me help you. Let me talk to you, because when I was your age, I got pregnant, and you don't have to be. Or when I was your age, I got raped, or I got molested. Or when Tyler Perry just did a very revealing story on Oprah just, I think it was yesterday or day before.
Oh.
And you can Google Tyler Perry and the story of his being abused, physically beat by his dad to the point where he had all kind of whelps, to his where his auntie had pulled a gun on his daddy, and his mother was very passive. She allowed a lot of this stuff to go on. He was sexually abused by men, some in the church, some outside the church, and by women as well, that sent him on a downward tailspin, that sent him in within himself. And so my wife and I were talking, and she was saying, well, there's something about going through all of that pain that produced all of that genre of production to the point where he's the second highest grossing director in Hollywood right now, only to the guy who wrote Avatar. So in the sense that we can, you know, we can create something great and magnificent out of pain and torture, it does not mean that the pain and the torture is validated by what comes after, because it is painful. It is torturous when we become sexualized at such young age. And we don't have a chance to be children. We don't have a chance to live our innocence. We don't have a chance to explore our sexuality. We have 2 minutes left, and I thank you so much, Marion, for joining us tonight. God bless you, and please call in again. We'll be here every Thursday evening at the same time. This is Reverend Carl, and you can find me on the web at helpsomebody.net. Or if you want to friend me, go to Facebook, facebook.com/rev.karl. And we're looking forward to hearing from you. We're here every Thursday evening. The call-in number, just write it down, 347-855-8793. We really love you. We appreciate you. And we want you to know that there is victory in Jesus. There's victory in Jesus. There's an old song.
How Satan came.
Yes.
How he gave his life on Calvary to save a wretch like me. Precious blood atoning. Then I repented of my sin and won the victory. I heard about his healing, of his cleansing power, revealing how he made the lame to walk again and caused the blind to see. So then I cried, oh, did Jesus come and heal?
You're listening to the Reverend Darrell Coley. Thank you very much. God bless you. It's Reverend Carl White. Call back in next week. We'll be back. God bless you.
Jesus came and brought to me.